This is an ad by Regain Couples Therapy and features real testimonials.
This was our first time trying therapy, and honestly, it was long overdue. Looking back, we just wish we had started sooner.
Regain's qualified therapists help couples when they can't get there on their own.
We thought it was intimacy issues, but Andrea helped us uncover a deeper root cause we hadn't even realized was there.
Visit regain.com/couplespod to get 10% off your first month. Regain, powered by BetterHelp.
People who were almost murdered. What's your story? Story one. I was coming home from a bachelor party at 2 a.m. And on the way back, I realized we had all forgotten the steak dinner portion of the evening that we had planned. I didn't want to wake up my wife and baby by drunkenly rummaging around the kitchen, so I had the taxi drop me off at the Dunkin' Donuts half a mile from my house. This was before Uber existed. I got myself a couple of egg and cheese bagels and started walking home. I made sure to take the quieter neighborhood street, rather than the busier one, to avoid potential drunk drivers. However, about a block into the neighborhood, I saw two men walking toward me on the sidewalk. I considered crossing the street, but thought that might seem insulting. After all, they were clearly just walking home from a fun evening like me. When they were a few feet away, I gave them a "How you doing?" nod, and they returned it. I felt proud of myself for treating them like fellow guys and not being suspicious. Then as they walked past me, one of them suddenly raised a tire iron and struck me hard in the back of the head. I fell into the street from the impact but remained conscious. One held my arms down while the other got on my legs and started going through my pockets. I told them to take whatever they wanted, and they told me to be quiet or they would harm me. When they asked where my wallet was, I told them which pocket it was in, and again they told me to shut up or they would hurt me. They took my wallet, phone, and watch, and then kicked me a few more times in the head before running off. I was bleeding and seriously concussed, and without a phone at 2:30 a.m., there was no way I could get home on my own. I saw a house nearby with the flickering light of a TV in an upstairs bedroom. I crawled over, pulled myself onto the porch, leaned against the door, and knocked while calling for help. The homeowner was understandably scared and didn't want to open the door for a stranger who couldn't even stand up to be seen through the front door's peephole. I was feeling very faint and was covered in blood from the head wound, but I managed to convince him to call 911 and get an ambulance. I also asked if he could call my wife. At that point, he seemed more confident that I wasn't trying to trick him and offered me a cordless phone through a chain door. He said he wanted to help, but I needed to stay on the porch because he had just redone his floors and I was bleeding too much. When the EMTs arrived, they decided to take me to the better hospital rather than the one just a few blocks away. But the route to the better hospital required several blocks of cobblestone streets, an experience I would not recommend to any concussed person strapped to a gurney in the back of an ambulance. I needed 24 staples in my head, and the doctors said I was lucky to have survived such a severe blow with a blunt object. But the saddest part, I never actually got my egg and cheese bagels. Story 2. When I was young, maybe 4 or 5 years old, my family lived in a small town of about 1,200 people. It was mostly a farming community. My dad was the manager of the only bank in town. A farmer missed some payments on a loan, so the bank foreclosed and took his farm. This farmer apparently blamed my father personally, so he went to the bank with a rifle and threatened him. My father talked to him, the police were called, and the farmer was arrested and arraigned. Bail was posted for the farmer, so he was released from jail. A few days later, my family was eating dinner when we heard a truck pull up and park in front of our house. It was a very quiet street in a small town, so my father went to the front window to see who it was. It was the same farmer, and this time he had a shotgun. He walked right up to the front door and knocked, and my family rushed out the back door and ran to a neighbor's house. Our front door was unlocked, so he could have entered and harmed us, but I guess he didn't think to check it. The police were called again, and the farmer was arrested. My family spent the next week or so in a hotel a few towns away until it was confirmed that the farmer would remain in jail without the possibility of bail. Story 3. I was a freshman in college, and during my first semester, I pledged a fraternity. One night, I was assigned to work the door at a party, which wasn't uncommon. Around 1:30 to 2 a.m., a group of guys who worked at the dining hall, I remembered one of them because he made an amazing cheesesteak, showed up and each paid $5 per cup. A few minutes after they paid, the last keg ran out, and none of them got any beer. As soon as they told me the keg was empty,
I started counting out cash to pay them back for the cups they bought. Before I could give them their money back, one of my intoxicated pledge brothers decided to physically force them out the door while yelling and insulting them. As soon as I calmed my buddy down, I went outside to give them their cash back, only to be met with a huge surprise. When I reached the bottom of the back steps, Cheesesteak Guy stepped forward aggressively and said, "You all made a big mistake. I'm seriously armed," and pulled a handgun from his waistband, pointing it directly between my eyes. At that moment, it was a miracle that 18-year-old me didn't completely lose it. A few of the older guys from the house came outside and were able to talk him down without incident. But it felt like that gun was aimed at me forever. Long story short, I was incredibly lucky that I didn't get hurt that night. Needless to say, I went without cheesesteaks for a few semesters after that. Story 4. This might be a bit of a stretch, but my closest brush, while working at a university, started when a man called the office saying he used to attend and wanted to re-enroll. He had such a strange set of circumstances that the call was escalated to me. After a few minutes, I could tell something was off. It turned out he was mentally unwell and calling from a mental care facility. He sounded like he just wanted to chat and seemed lonely, so his calls were always directed to me. He ended up calling about once a week, mostly rambling about nothing, but occasionally saying something really bizarre. He told me he was secretly Jesus Christ, that he had helped found the university, that he owned the city's baseball team, and that he knew a secret word at a store in the mall that would get me free soap for life. Anyway, I talked to him each time he called and thought I was helping a lonely older man. After about 6 months, I got a call from campus security saying my father was on campus to visit me, but couldn't find my office. My dad lives states away, so I immediately knew something was wrong. I could hear talking in the background and recognized the voice. It was the caller. I informed the officer that this was not my father and that he absolutely should not be allowed on campus. The officer had already been suspicious, hence the call to me. He managed to get more information from the man, and it turned out he had been released from a mental facility earlier that day after threatening a nurse with a sharp object and smearing waste on her and in his room. I doubt he came to hurt me, but we were all pretty shaken up. He still calls occasionally, and now we forward him to the campus officer who's familiar with him. Last I heard, he called from jail. Story 5. I was a clerk at an appliance repair shop. A customer had brought in his riding lawnmower to be fixed, but later decided it was too expensive to repair. So my boss asked me to load it into our lift truck and drive it back to his address. I was 17 and had just gotten my driver's license, so it felt like a big responsibility, and I was happy to do it. I loaded it up and drove to his home. When I started unloading it, I noticed the battery was disconnected. One of the technicians must have removed it to work on it. Unfortunately, I had no tools to reattach it. I checked the work order and it said, "Customer declined repair, needs replacement engine." So I figured he wouldn't care since the engine didn't work anyway. I rang the doorbell and a heavyset man, clearly intoxicated and shirtless, suddenly opened the door. I had already lowered the mower off the truck and rolled it into his yard. He shouted, "Why are you leaving that piece of junk in my yard?" I asked, "Isn't this your riding lawnmower?" He replied, "Yeah, it's mine, but it's broken and I don't want it. What is wrong with you people?" I apologized and asked if he wanted me to load it back up. I didn't know what else to say. For some reason, that made him even angrier, and he stormed back inside. I returned to the truck to use the radio, this was before cell phones, to contact my boss. While I was doing that, the man came back onto the porch holding a shotgun. He pointed it at the truck and fired. The windshield shattered and I couldn't hear anything but ringing. I jumped into the truck, started it, threw it in reverse and sped out of the driveway, almost landing in a ditch on the other side of the road. He fired again, this time hitting the passenger side of the truck near the door. Shrapnel flew into the cab and cut my leg. I drove back to work as fast as I could, called my parents, and told my boss I was never coming back. The police came, took my statement, and arrested him. I had to testify a few months later, even though I desperately never wanted to see him again. He only spent about 6 months in prison. Luckily, by the time it was all over, I had moved away to college and didn't have to worry about him anymore. Story 6. When I was 19, I dated a girl whose dad was extremely unstable. He was probably just over 5 feet tall, but all muscle. He had done time in prison for drug-related and violent crimes.
Once, a guy cut him off in traffic, and he followed the man until he could box him in, tore open the car door, and held a knife to the man's waist, threatening him until the guy lost control of himself. This was the level of danger I was dealing with, though I didn't learn most of this until much later. My girlfriend and I lived together in an apartment. I worked in the afternoons and she worked during the day. There was a couple of hours in the afternoon when no one was home. One day I had the day off and was running some errands. I came home during that usual empty window of time and saw her father walking out of our bedroom.
This is an ad by Regain Couples Therapy and features real testimonials.
This was our first time trying therapy, and honestly, it was long overdue. Looking back, we just wish we had started sooner.
Regain's qualified therapists help couples when they can't get there on their own.
We thought it was intimacy issues, but Andrea helped us uncover a deeper root cause we hadn't even realized was there.
Visit regain.com/couplespod to get 10% off your first month. Regain, couples therapy that works.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along, which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ziprecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. At ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Member Week is here at Lowe's. Don't miss your chance to get up to 40% off hundreds of items like paint, tools, home essentials, and more. Shop our exclusive deals happening in-store and online now through July 18th. Not a rewards member? Join for free today and get ready to save more. Lowe's, we help you save. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
I asked him what he was doing there, and he said, since he liked me, he would be honest. He told me he was there to rob us. He was under the influence and in the middle of a crime spree. He had already threatened several people in the complex and then climbed through our bedroom window. He said he looked around but didn't find anything valuable, so he was leaving. He told me he wouldn't hurt me, but if I ever told anyone, especially his daughter, what happened, I would disappear and no one would ever find me. Then he walked out. The entire time he was speaking, all I could think was not to give him a reason to attack me. That and the fact that I had a coffee mug in the living room with almost $1,000 in it. Thankfully, he didn't find that. I never saw him again. My relationship was already shaky, and this gave me the final push to get out. I never told anyone what happened until after he passed away. Story 7. Not sure if this counts, but when I was 11, I went to meet my friend on a bridge in town. When I got there, 2 older teens, probably around 19 or 20, were waiting. I'm pretty sure my friend had set me up as some kind of initiation or prank. Things escalated quickly when they realized I didn't have anything they wanted. One of them became aggressive, put me in a headlock, and dragged me to the edge of the bridge. He told me that if I cried or showed fear, he would throw me over the edge. He said something like, "Be a man," as if that somehow justified his behavior. I was terrified, so I teared up. As he pushed me toward the barrier, my friend, who had been silent the entire time, suddenly screamed, a full-throated scream, and shouted at me to run. The scream distracted them just long enough for me to pull away and take off. My friend and I ran in opposite directions, and the 2 guys chased after me instead of him. Luckily, there was a police car parked at the bottom of the stairs next to the bridge, with 2 officers on a lunch break. I ran straight into the back of the police car. When I looked back, the 2 guys were already running the other way. I think their intention was to scare me more than anything, but at 11 years old, it felt terrifyingly real. Needless to say, I never spoke to that friend again. Story 8. Probably a bit late, but here's my story. I was a firefighter for about 15 years. As a rookie, I responded to a smell of natural gas call. It was a common call,
We'd usually just wait around with the lights flashing until the gas company arrived. But to this day, it remains the highest gas concentration I've ever encountered in a residential setting. We could smell gas from 5 blocks away. Long story short, 2 firefighters and 2 officers made entry into the home where the smell seemed to originate. We managed to wedge open the garage doors, the old flip-up kind, and walked in single file to a door at the back corner that led to the basement. I was only wearing my boots and bunker pants. It was hot out that day. The gas inside the garage was overwhelming. The door into the basement had a glass window, and the lead officer used his flashlight to scan the room as he opened the door. Just as he yanked it open, he spotted someone and started yelling. We all rushed in. It was dark, humid, and reeked of gas. I think I was third in line and only made it a few steps before colliding with the officers in front of me. Then I heard the lead officer say in an almost defeated tone, "He has a lighter." Those 3 or 4 seconds felt like an eternity. In the back corner of the basement, slouched in a worn-out recliner, was a middle-aged man holding an orange Bic lighter. And he flicked it. I saw him do it, twice. Apparently, he had flicked it earlier, too, which is what got the officer's attention. The 4 of us just stood there, frozen, waiting for the explosion. I distinctly remember wondering how big the crater would be. Thankfully, nothing happened. Once our instincts kicked in, we collectively rushed the guy. He didn't resist and was nearly unconscious. We had to carry him out. He had broken open the main gas line where it entered the house and had left a note. Medics placed an airway tube, and I assisted with ventilation all the way to the hospital. I never found out what happened to him or if he intended to take anyone else with him. I actually think the gas concentration was too high to ignite. It had passed the upper explosive limit, which I believe is around 15%. The air was basically too saturated to combust. I was definitely lightheaded after being in there for less than a minute. I learned some important lessons that day, ones I try to pass on whenever I can. Story 9. My ex-stepfather is bipolar. After my mom left him, he had another manic episode. He broke into our home and pulled a gun on us. He told me to go to my room and not to call the police. I was 11. I called the police anyway. When they arrived, he shot through the door to my bedroom and emptied the clip. I had already grabbed my cat and was hiding outside under the deck. I'm just thankful he shot the door and not my mom. My half-sister was born later that year. At her funeral, he showed up and kept trying to talk to me. He couldn't understand why I refused. He was never charged and has no memory of the incident. He spent a weekend in a mental health facility and was then released to return to work as a teacher. I still don't understand how all of this was overlooked and how he was still considered a respected educator and member of the community. Story 10. I was 13 years old. My friend and I were out skateboarding, and for some reason, this one woman became extremely angry that we were skating on the sidewalk in front of her house. She began screaming incoherently, and we just laughed it off and kept going. My friend went one way and I went another. A minute later, I was still riding on the sidewalk, heading home, when suddenly the same woman pulled up beside me in her car and started screaming again. To be honest, I responded with some expletives and told her to leave me alone. I kept riding, but she continued driving slowly beside me, yelling the entire time. Eventually, she drove off, but then she made a U-turn and came back toward me. I assumed she would just pass by again, but then I realized she was actually aiming her car directly at me. I froze and watched her accelerate toward me. Eventually, my brain kicked in, and I dove out of the way just as her car sped over the spot where I had been standing. I don't know her exact speed, but I'd estimate it was around 30 to 40 miles per hour. She kept driving, and I sprinted home. She was later arrested and pled guilty to assault with a deadly weapon with intent to kill. Story 11. This definitely isn't as bad as some of the other stories. I'm glad you all made it out, sending love. But when I was 10 or 11, my sister, who was about 14 at the time, started dating. My mom didn't allow it but agreed to let them hang out at our house under supervision. However, the guy she was seeing just kept getting weirder. He would show up with knives and had huge cuts on his body, once from his neck to his stomach. He claimed he got into a knife fight. Whether it was self-inflicted or not, we didn't know. Eventually, my mom banned him from the house. What we didn't know was that he kept sneaking into my sister's room through her window at night. Nothing ever happened then, but years later, after my sister had gotten married and moved 2 states away, I was watching TV and his face popped up on the screen. He had murdered 3 people, written messages in blood on their walls, and committed other horrifying acts. It instantly brought me back to when he used to be at our house. He always carried knives and would sometimes wait until we were alone, then push me against a wall or couch, hang me upside down by my ankles, and hold a knife to my throat, saying things like, "Just imagine I cut your throat right now. Just imagine this is your last breath." So again, not as extreme as others, but he turned out to be a murderer. He could have taken out our whole family. He is now on death row, serving both a life sentence and awaiting execution. Story 12. When I was 14, I left home due to physical, emotional, and psychological abuse from my parents. I was placed temporarily in a group rescue home that was supposed to be short term. I stayed for 6 weeks. Most kids stayed too. During that time, I saw a lot of scared kids come and go. Because I'd been there longer, they moved me into a small private room in the back of the house. I either stayed there or sat in the backyard reading books. I kept to myself, tried to be quiet and non-threatening, and had started making friends with some of the others. Then there was Ernesto. He was close to aging out of the system and was there as a last resort to keep him from going to jail. He'd had trouble in every foster home, and his caseworker was doing her best to get him into the military at 18. For some reason, Ernesto felt incredibly threatened by me and made that very clear. I was 14, tall for my age, and underweight from years of neglect, but absolutely not a threat. A few days before I was supposed to be moved to a more permanent placement, one of the girls pulled me aside and told me to lock my door at night. She even suggested I block the door with something. She and another girl had overheard Ernesto muttering in Spanish about taking care of me and were worried. They were right to be. During a routine inspection, staff noticed a large kitchen knife was missing. A search revealed it had been hidden under Ernesto's mattress. When the staff confronted him, he admitted he had planned to harm me in my sleep. The police were called, and he was taken away in handcuffs. My placement was moved up to the next day. For obvious reasons, I didn't sleep well that night. Story 13. My now ex-boyfriend wanted a gun. I grew up around firearms and knew enough about gun safety to realize he wasn't mature enough to have one. I told him not to get one, but on his 21st birthday, he went out and bought one anyway. He was so proud of it and constantly took it apart and cleaned it. One night, he was sitting on the couch across from the TV, cleaning his gun at the long end of the coffee table. I was sitting on the floor, perpendicular to him, crafting at the short end of the same table. Suddenly, the gun went off. I panicked. He just sat there, stunned. He had shot the cable box. For some reason, he thought it was a good idea to point the gun and dry fire it. He was convinced it was unloaded. He initially aimed it at my head. I was too focused on my crafting to notice. Then thought better and aimed it at the TV. He reconsidered again and aimed it at the cable box and fired. The bullet went through the cable box, then through the walls along a hallway, and ended up in a closet wall. Thankfully, no one was in any of those rooms, and it didn't hit an adjacent apartment. I was expecting the police to show up, but they never did. He almost injured or killed me that night, and somehow I stayed in that relationship for a few more years before leaving. Story 14. I was backpacking through South America and took a bus between cities in Brazil. As you might know, night buses are often targeted by robbers, and I was unlucky enough to be on one of those buses. Being the only foreigner on board, I was an obvious target. They took everything: passport, cash, phone, and then locked me in the luggage compartment after pointing a weapon at me. That was terrifying. What was even worse happened a week later when I was on another bus, and it was robbed again. They immediately went to me, the only foreigner again, and demanded items, things the previous group had already stolen. I broke down crying with a weapon in my face, trying to explain I had nothing to give. They took me outside the bus, and I truly thought they were going to kill me. Instead, they locked me in the luggage compartment again while they robbed everyone else. After that, I booked flights only. Story 15. I was being screamed at by my ex, as usual. I don't remember what I said or did, but he grabbed my arm and pulled me off the couch. He started hitting me. It wasn't the first time. I'd trained myself not to react, hoping he'd lose interest if I didn't cry or show emotion. Then he pushed me against the wall and wrapped his hand around my throat. I was struggling to breathe, but I still wouldn't cry. Just before I passed out, I used all the strength I had and punched him in the ribs as hard as I could. He dropped me, and before I could even catch my breath, I struck him again. When he went down, I kicked him in the ribs and locked myself in the bathroom. He came to the door later with his usual apologies. I knew then that I had to leave, and 2 weeks later, I did. It's been 8 years since. Story 16. I was around 10 or 11 years old, selling cookies with my Girl Scout troop alongside my cousin. We were in Tulsa, Oklahoma, at a U-shaped strip mall. Most of the buildings were abandoned, but there were newer stores nearby, so it was still a busy selling spot. My cousin and I were walking around when a tan car pulled up with three large men inside. They drove slowly next to us, asking if we were alone, and one started opening his door while the car was still moving. My grandma was nearby where the strip mall opened onto the main road, and she started yelling for us. One of the men got out of the back seat as we tried to run, but at that exact moment, a police car pulled up in front of their vehicle. It was like divine timing. The men took off immediately. Years later, I swear I saw the same man who tried to grab my cousin walking around that area again. We never went back, and I quit Girl Scouts shortly after that. Story 17. I met a guy who went to school with my sister, so I didn't think I had to worry too much. But after just three dates, he started acting strange, asking if I'd be okay with being friends with his ex, or if he could keep her photo on his screen. I ended things quickly, feeling very creeped out. He spiraled into depression, and I agreed to help him set up a dating profile just to get him off my back. A year later, he texted to thank me, saying he had gotten engaged. 6 months later, it was all over the news. His new wife had felt unsafe and locked him out of their home. He broke in and harmed her, then turned the weapon on himself. They both died. I can't help but feel some guilt because I helped him create that profile. I know I'm not to blame, but I still feel awful for being grateful that it wasn't me. That was 12 years ago, and it still haunts me. Story 18. Between the ages of 15 to 18, while I still lived at home, my older brother Peter became addicted to meth. He deteriorated fast, and it was terrifying and confusing. Most nights my mom worked and my dad was overseas, so I was alone with him after school. He'd fly into violent rages. What started as pushing and shoving turned into serious harm. After long binges, he'd experienced drug-induced psychosis. He dragged me by the hair, punched me in the face, dislocated my shoulder, and once grabbed me by the neck and strangled me until I nearly passed out. As I was fading, he smashed my head against a brick wall, knocking me out cold. I genuinely thought I was going to die. After that, I would go to my mom's job after school and sleep in her car until she finished. When I turned 18, I moved out. I knew staying any longer could cost me my life. I told my parents what happened, but since they didn't witness it, they thought I was exaggerating. After I moved out, I got treatment for PTSD and started doing better. Peter continued to spiral. Eventually, my parents began to experience the same violence. Once they finally believed me, they apologized, which helped repair our relationship. I'm now 32. For the past decade, Peter's had a pattern: binging meth until he loses control, getting kicked out, violating restraining orders. He even went to jail for that. I constantly feared he'd seriously hurt or kill one of our parents. Last year, he went to rehab and is still there. He seems like a different person, and we've rebuilt some of our relationship. I still get anxious around him, but it's getting better. Story 19. Last time I talked about this on Reddit, people accused me of making it up, so I've been hesitant to share it again. But honestly, it feels good to get it out, so I'll give it another try. I'm not going to go into too many details this time. In short, my roommate drugged me and nearly ended my life. But he didn't actually want me to die and ended up keeping me alive. At the time, I didn't realize I had been drugged. I thought I was just extremely sick and that he was being an amazing roommate for spoon-feeding me and taking care of me when I couldn't move. Eventually, his behavior started to seem really off. I got extremely bad vibes and moved out in the middle of the night, leaving out a lot of details here. He's now serving 30 plus 15 years in prison for drugging, assaulting, and filming his victims. Some of the victims are still missing. I was in one of the videos and I had no memory of it. That's how I knew he had drugged me too, because I genuinely believed I was just sick until I saw that video. Story 20. My ex threatened to harm me if I ever left him. But then, he also threatened to hurt my mother if I stayed with him, claiming it was because she had been abusive to me growing up, and that he wanted to prove how much he loved me. Earlier in the relationship, he told me he had harmed someone just for calling me a name. I honestly think he said it to impress me, because he believed I liked characters like that. Since I had mentioned watching Mirai Nikki in Yandere Simulator, he was convinced I was into that kind of behavior. He tried to isolate me by getting me to move in with him to a very small town, so small it didn't even have a grocery store. You had to buy food from the local gas station. He tried to get me to cut off all internet access too. He then began eating, contaminating or throwing away all the food we bought. He disturbed my sleep by moving violently in bed and tried to get me fired from our job. We worked the same position, by dumping all of his responsibilities on me, hoping I'd burn out or snap. He wanted to break me down into someone who would never question him, a kind of trophy partner who did everything he said. It felt like a twisted modern-day version of The Taming of the Shrew. I survived by secretly ordering food from the nearest restaurant, sneaking out of bed to sleep on the couch, and using my phone on the workplace's Wi-Fi to connect with the outside world. Eventually, I reached out to my mom, who helped me plan my escape. I convinced him to let me visit my mom under the pretense that she had a medical appointment and needed someone to wait with her. That part wasn't true, but my mom is a cancer survivor, so it sounded believable. While he was at work one night, I packed up my things, hiding boxes and suitcases behind the couch and in other spots he wouldn't notice, and had my mom waiting nearby. We couldn't do it in the dark due to some issues with the neighbors, but once he came home and passed out, I signaled my mom. In just 10 to 15 minutes, we grabbed everything, including the pets, and got out. I was ready to run at any moment if he woke up, because I genuinely believed he would hurt me if he caught me leaving. By some miracle, we made it out, and I went with my mom before moving into my new place. I haven't heard from him since. Story 21. When I turned 18, my parents kicked me out. The only thing I could afford was a very cheap apartment in a bad area. I lived on the second floor, and the man below me was aggressive and clearly involved in substance use. He constantly harassed me and would bang on my door to complain about noise, even though I was always quiet. My boyfriend often stayed over because he worried about my safety. One night, I drove us to my place, and he got in the shower while I walked to the living room carrying a heavy basket of towels. I accidentally dropped it, and it made a loud thud. Seconds later, there was a knock on the door. I was wearing small pajama shorts and a tank top. I opened the door, and there he was, my downstairs neighbor already yelling at me about being too loud. I tried to close the door, but he forced it open and pushed me to the floor. He was on top of me, trying to tear at my clothes when suddenly he froze. I looked behind him and saw my boyfriend, fresh out of the shower, holding a legally owned firearm, pointed directly at the man's head. Calmly, he said, "Please get up and out of my apartment before you lose something very important to you." The man got up and left immediately. I was terrified. I'm sure that if my boyfriend hadn't been there, I would have been seriously harmed, or worse. I broke my lease 8 months early and got out of there for good. Story 22. This happened over 10 years ago. I was working at a group home for at-risk teens, and one of the kids tried to choke me. I believe they were trying to take my life. This teen was the size of a full-grown adult, and I was just 90 pounds and 4 feet 11 inches. It was close to bedtime when my shift started, and most of the kids were either in bed or getting ready for bed. One of them came into the kitchen with me. We said goodnight, but they were clearly stalling. Everything happened so fast. They suddenly attacked me, jumped on top of me, and tried to choke me. I kept fighting back, which made it harder for them to maintain control, but at one point, they managed to pin me down. I started screaming as loud as I could, and thankfully, some of the other kids woke up and intervened, stopping the attack. At some point during all this, the teen poured gasoline all over the kitchen and tried to set it on fire. One of the reasons they snapped was that they had just returned from an extended home visit and hadn't taken their medication. Their parents didn't believe there was anything wrong with their child, so they hadn't ensured the meds were taken. That decision ended up putting everyone in danger. Story 23. I was 19, hanging out with some people on the sidewalk at the edge of a park where a local gang was known to congregate. None of us were gang members, but the gang members tolerated us because everyone had always been on friendly terms. Some of them even bought marijuana from people I was with. It was a dark Friday night with poor street lighting. The gang members weren't around that evening, which was unusual. We had a few 40-ounce bottles going around, and things were quiet until we noticed a dark vehicle slowly driving past. It caught all of our attention. There was a short guy standing next to me. His head barely reached my chin. After seeing the vehicle for the third time, I decided to walk a few feet away to my car. I had a bad feeling and thought the people inside might jump out and start a fight. As soon as I got into my car to grab something for protection, just in case, I heard gunfire. The shots, possibly from a .22 caliber weapon, landed on the sidewalk just a few feet in front of my car. Most of the group ran into the park and hid in the brush, where there was no lighting. I ducked inside my car, and by some miracle, no bullets came near me. The vehicle must have taken off while I was ducked down. When it was quiet again, I stepped out and saw the short guy who had been standing next to me lying on the ground. I feared he had been hit in the neck or another vital area. I examined him and saw he had only been grazed across the top of his head. He had been right next to me, on the side from which the shot came. That same bullet could have hit me if I hadn't gone to the car. A few months later, I was sitting in my car just a few blocks from that same park, again in a poorly lit area, waiting for someone to come out of a house. I heard gunfire again. I then saw a different vehicle from the previous incident driving away, but with the same people from before. This time, they did a drive-by on a member of the local gang I had never seen before, but recognized by the color he was wearing. Unlike the first time, he fired back. I saw him walking by shortly after, visibly angry. He punched a for sale sign in front of a house. After that, I stopped hanging out in that area altogether. Story 24. Back in 1988, I had to transfer to a new location within the same company. Luckily, I had a cousin who lived in that town and was happy to let me stay with her until I got settled. I had only been there for a couple of weeks when, one Friday night after softball team practice, I came home, parked in front of the house, and opened the trunk to get my gear. That's when someone grabbed me by the hair and cut my throat. There was a lot of blood, and I had no idea what had just happened. I fell to my knees holding my neck, not knowing where the attacker had come from or where he went. I honestly thought that was it. This is how I die, like in the movies. But I didn't die. In fact, I didn't even feel that bad at first. That's when I saw a man trying to break into my cousin's house. I figured that had to be the attacker. I wasn't dead yet and still felt strong. If I was going to die, I figured I'd take him with me. I grabbed my Louisville Slugger from the trunk, a Mickey Mantle signature model, and beat the man until I passed out. At the time, I was less than a year out of the military, over 6 feet tall and around 200 pounds. He was shorter and smaller. When I woke up, I was lying on my cousin's lawn. The man was nearby and not moving. I thought he was dead. I knew I was badly hurt and had to get to a hospital. I went inside, but my cousin wasn't home. She and her mom had gone into the city, so I figured I'd drive myself. The only problem? I didn't know where the hospital was. I thought I'd stop at a gas station or convenience store for directions, but I was covered in blood and didn't want to scare people. I cleaned myself up, changed clothes, and got ready to go, until I noticed the wound on my neck. It was deep and wide, almost like a toothless, bloody grin. I didn't want to cause panic, so I put on a turtleneck sweater and left. I made it to the ER without issue. I walked in and calmly told the nurse I'd been attacked, my throat had been cut, and that I needed to be admitted. She looked skeptical until I pulled down my sweater's collar. She turned pale and immediately put me in a chair, telling me not to move. My carotid artery was visible. The attacker missed it by 1/16th of an inch. The jugular vein had been hit but not severed. While I told them the story, one of the staff recognized my last name and asked if I was related to a certain doctor. I said yes. That's my cousin's father. They asked if they could call him, and I agreed. They gave me blood transfusions and rushed me to surgery. When I woke up, my uncle, the doctor, and his son, the attorney, were there. The attacker turned out to be my cousin's ex-boyfriend. She had kicked him out for being violent and abusive. When he saw me move in, he assumed I was her new boyfriend and tried to eliminate me. He's long gone now. I'm still here. Story 25. I had an ex who was extremely abusive. On the last night I was with him, he had been drinking and using drugs for several days. He was paranoid that I would try to leave. I woke up in our room to him standing over me, pointing a firearm at my head. By that point, I had started sleeping with a small knife under my pillow. I reacted instantly and stabbed him in the leg, which threw off his aim. He shot me in the left shoulder, and while he was pulling the knife out, I ran for the door. He then threw another knife at me. He was disturbingly accurate with knives, and it hit me in the back, puncturing my right lung. A neighbor heard the gunshot, broke down the door, and saw me lying in a pool of blood. He restrained my ex and called emergency services. I don't remember much after the knife injury. I was told I went into cardiac arrest on the way to the hospital. The injuries were compounded by the fact that I had already suffered multiple broken bones and a head injury the day before. I spent some time in a medically induced coma while my body healed. Knowing that the EMS worker saved my life was what inspired me to go into the medical field. Story 26. When I was around 4 years old, my mom brought me to a party she was attending. Not a responsible decision. Unfortunately, she wasn't the only parent who brought kids. While the adults were busy drinking and socializing, two boys around ages 6 and 9 lured me to the backyard pool and blocked the door behind us. They intentionally drowned me. I still vaguely remember the older boy smiling while I struggled. No one realized what had happened until someone came into the kitchen, saw my body floating, and the two boys just standing there watching. No one could get to me because the boys had blocked the door. My mom was panicking, trying to force it open. One woman at the party ran upstairs, broke out a window screen, and jumped off the roof to reach me and perform CPR. It was winter. I was completely blue. If she hadn't acted, I wouldn't have survived. When the ambulance arrived, the boys and their mother had already disappeared. My family realized it had been intentional after I came home from the hospital with a high fever. I was delirious from either dying and being revived or nearly dying. My grandparents, who I lived with, called my great aunt for support. Late at night, while they were talking in the living room, I got out of bed, stood on the fireplace mantel with my eyes closed, and described everything that had happened in vivid detail. Then I turned around and went back to bed. It terrified them. Honestly, if this hadn't happened to me, I don't think I would believe it either. Story 27. I had two best friends growing up. Let's call them Bob and Tom. We were inseparable for a solid 4 years. Then things fell apart. Tom had a girlfriend, Bob wanted her, and they ended up cheating behind Tom's back. The whole situation caused everything to unravel. I stayed friends with both, but they never wanted to see each other again. That same girl got Bob into using meth, and they spiraled fast, from bad to terrifying. One day, Bob caught Tom alone and nearly beat him to death with a skateboard. Tom survived, and Bob ended up serving 7 years for aggravated assault with intent to cause harm. At the time, I was supplying mid-level quantities of marijuana and had built a decent clientele. I went to drop off a couple of ounces to one of my clients. Let's call him Jack. He answered the door holding a weapon with about 4 or 5 people behind him. He said, "You're friends with Tom, right?" I said, "Yes." "Cool. Well, unless you tell me where he is right now, I'm going to end you." I actually knew where Tom was. He was waiting in my car a few blocks away. But I denied it. They wanted to harm him because they blamed him for Bob going to prison, which didn't make any sense. I tried to stay calm and reason with them, telling them that I was close with both of them and didn't want to be part of it. I handed over the weed for free just to de-escalate the situation and thankfully made it out unharmed. Story 28. When I was 19 and new to the world, I got my first serving job at a bar. I became friendly with the cook, a tough but seemingly nice guy. One night, around 3 a.m., he asked me for a ride home. I said yes. On the way, he asked if we could stop at a friend's house real quick. He had something to deliver. Two men got into the back of my car, and a drug deal went down. I had no idea that's what this was. Suddenly, one of the men pulled out a weapon and pointed it at the cook's head, demanding his money and whatever else he had. Then he pointed it at me. I had no money or anything else on me. The man fired a shot through the windshield just above my head. At first, I didn't realize what had happened because I couldn't hear anything. Then I saw the bullet hole in the glass and the ricochet marks in the dashboard. Coming from a sheltered background, I was completely in shock. The two guys ran from the car. The cook told me to drive around the corner to find another friend. I did, still in a daze. And when we got there, he ran inside. I followed him, still not thinking clearly, and walked into a room where they were putting on ski masks and pulling out large firearms. That was the moment I finally snapped out of it. I got out of there immediately. Looking back, I came dangerously close to becoming collateral damage in a drug deal gone wrong. I moved away a year later and never told my parents. They would have completely lost it. Story 29. I grew up in the U.S. but spent time living around the world, including a couple of years in Moscow, Russia. This happened about 8 years ago when I was 23 or 24. I had been out late and was taking a taxi home. I lived near the Kolozhskaya metro station in one of those big apartment blocks. Since the train stopped running around 1 a.m., I'd usually just have the taxi drop me near the metro and walk the last 200 meters rather than try to explain exactly which of the identical buildings I lived in. That night was no different. I got out of the taxi, not noticing the refrigerated truck parked across from the metro entrance. Engine running, back doors open. I wouldn't register it until much later. As I walked past the metro entrance toward my building, an older man, maybe in his late 50s, started walking toward me. He gestured toward the truck and said something in Russian. I didn't understand, so I said, "I don't understand in both Russian and English." He kept talking, saying something about a taxi. I replied, "I don't need a taxi," in Russian, and walked past him. He suddenly grabbed me from behind, putting both hands under my armpits and yanking me backward. I was pretty tall and heavy at the time, which ironically saved me. I didn't try to balance myself, I just collapsed on top of him. That gave me a chance to scramble away. He grabbed at my legs, ripping my tights, but I was too heavy and uncoordinated from the alcohol for him to get a good hold. I got up before he did. Now we were facing off, and that's when I noticed the back of the refrigerated truck. Still open, engine still running. Adrenaline took over. I started screaming at him. Something like, "Come on, do it, try me," swinging my purse like a weapon. He stopped, took a breath, and chuckled. He actually laughed, like someone watching a kid have a tantrum. Then he backed off, saying something in Russian with a weird smile. I walked away quickly, and as I rounded the corner to my building, I looked back. He was sitting on the bumper of that truck, still smiling. That's the story of how I almost ended up in the back of a refrigerated truck on the edge of Moscow at 3 a.m. Story 30. A guy I was dating started using meth and drinking heavily, so I kicked him out and locked the doors. But when I called the police, they told me I had to let him back in because he legally lived there. I let him in, and he acted like he was just going to lie down on the floor and go to sleep. I went to bed, thinking that was the end of it. I woke up to him standing at the foot of my bed, yelling disturbing things. I got up, turned on the light, and tried to calm him down. He said he wanted to be intimate, and I said no. The next thing I knew, he was on top of me on the bed. I screamed, kicked, and fought to get him off. I bit his arm, and he grabbed a pillow and a heavy blanket and shoved them over my face. I somehow managed to roll us both off the bed and got to the floor where I could break free and grab my phone. I stood in front of my son's bedroom door while calling the police. He started begging me not to make the call, but when he realized they had already answered, he ran. The police found him later, arrested him, and charged him with attempted murder. His family harassed me for months, begging me to drop the charges. When I told them I wouldn't, they escalated to threats and even called Child Protective Services with false claims that I was harming my child. That time in my life was one of the worst I've ever experienced. Even now, I sometimes forget how close I came to losing everything. And then it hits me all over again. I tend to disassociate when I'm going through something traumatic, so I don't remember all the details. But I remember every second I spent fighting for my life. Story 31. I've worked as a paramedic in one of the most dangerous countries in the world. In emergency response, you're often there just after things go horribly wrong. One night we were called to a taxi accident. Here, taxi refers to a large minibus-style van, usually meant to seat 20 people, but often carrying far more. Accidents involving these vehicles are brutal. Passengers are crushed together, and people often need to be cut out of the wreckage. With only two ambulances on site, we had to triage and move fast, taking whoever we could and coming back for the rest. I was treating a young boy, maybe 13 years old, who had a compound fracture, when I felt something press against the back of my head. At first, I thought someone had bumped into me, but the pressure didn't go away. I turned around, and there was a man holding a weapon to my head, screaming at me to check the kid's pockets for a phone. It took a few seconds to even register what was happening. A group of men were robbing both the paramedics and the accident victims. One was trying to rip a bag from a woman while she clung to it, screaming. I didn't know if they would actually harm me, but I wasn't about to take that chance. I handed over my personal phone, hoping it would make them leave. They stayed for about 5 more minutes before running off. Since then, some paramedics have started carrying weapons for protection. It's an unfortunate reality of working in areas like this. Crazy times. Story 32. Definitely using an alternate account for this one. When I was younger, my cousin tried to drown me. seemingly for no reason. He was a few years younger than me, but I had barely been in a pool before, and he practically lived in the water. We were hanging out in the pool when he suddenly pushed my head underwater. He'd done this before, and usually let me up right away, so I didn't think anything of it, until he didn't let go. I struggled and thrashed, trying to find something to hold on to, but I could only reach the slippery sides of the pool. I started panicking. Maybe I could have kicked off from the side, but I couldn't think straight. I'd already inhaled a little water going under, and in my panic, I just inhaled more. I felt my lungs fill with water and thought, "That's it. I'm gone." I don't remember how I got out. I think he pulled me out because I can't imagine how else I would have gotten out of that pool. All I know is I was suddenly out, my chest hurt, I was gasping for air and vomiting up water. He just stood there staring at me and then walked away like nothing had happened. He went inside to get a snack. We haven't really spoken since. I later found out he had multiple run-ins with the law. Years later, when my mom was around him again, he lost control and threatened her life. He spent time in juvenile detention throughout his teens, and I've heard he was arrested multiple times as an adult. I honestly think something was deeply wrong with him from the start. Story 33. It's happened to me twice. Once as a child and once as an adult. The first time I was in second grade. My parents liked to go to the library on weekends and would take me along. If I couldn't find anything interesting to read, I'd check out a movie at one of the kiosks. One weekend, a random kid and I were watching an old comedy together when his older brother, who had developmental issues, came over to talk to him. Suddenly, the brother wrapped both hands around my neck and started choking me, squeezing with everything he had. I was motioning frantically for help, but everyone just stood there, including my mom, who thought we were playing around. I remember everything going gray, then dark. I knew I was about to pass out or worse. With the last bit of strength I had, I kicked, not even aiming, and by sheer luck, I kicked him in the groin. It took me a few minutes to recover, but when I did, the kid told his mom that I had laughed at him, and he wanted to hurt me for it. The second time was years later. I was engaged, and we were on vacation with her family in Florida. We had our own rental car and had been arguing off and on throughout the trip. On the last day, while driving to the beach, I dozed off in the car. She arrived, parked in the sun, rolled up the windows, and got out, quietly so she wouldn't wake me. I woke up sometime later with severe heat sickness. I thought it had been an accident until, a few days later, she got drunk and casually said she was sorry for trying to kill me. Needless to say, I ended the relationship. Story 34. The first time it happened, I was in Miami with my girlfriend visiting her family. We were in Little Havana, and it was around 3 a.m. Her dad had stayed over at his mom's place, and we had driven there with him. Later, we decided to head back to our hotel. I had no idea where we were and was slowly making my way through a rough part of town in his 100,000-plus Mercedes. I needed gas and a restroom, so I stopped at a gas station. That's not something I'd normally do in an unfamiliar area, but this wasn't my car and I didn't want to risk running out. My girlfriend was asleep in the front seat. I got back in the car, and out of nowhere, a man slid into the back seat. Scared both of us. He got loud, demanding money and my watch, then pulled out a knife. I told him I had cash in the door pocket and was going to grab it slowly. Instead, I reached for my SIG and turned around with it pointed straight at him. He immediately got out of the car and ran. We waited nearly an hour for the police, and when they arrived, they acted like it was nothing out of the ordinary. They told us things like that happened often, and if we weren't locals, we shouldn't stop anywhere. They even said if we hit a red light, just run it, and explained to the officer if we got pulled over. I was incredibly relieved the man left so quickly and that I didn't have to pull the trigger. Story 35. After college, I had just moved out of my parents' mobile home into my first apartment. I went back to pick up a few remaining items. On their cluttered, hoarder-style front porch, I accidentally stepped on a scrap piece of styrofoam. That was all it took to send my alcoholic, abusive father into a rage. I decided to just leave. As I was starting my car, he ran outside, screaming threats and obscenities like a madman. He picked up an 8-foot railroad tie from the yard, used as a landscaping border, and as I began to drive away, he ran after me and threw it. It missed my head by inches, smashed through the rear side window, and landed in the back seat. I drove off with the massive log sticking out the back window while he hurled rocks at my car. I found a payphone, this was before cell phones, and called 911. I met an officer at a parking lot near my new place, logs still hanging out of the window. He listened impatiently to my story and said, "Well, that's just normal stuff between a father and son. Give it a few hours." I was 22. He didn't even file a report. But for me, that was it. After years of emotional, physical, and psychological abuse, I realized I was done. That day, I decided I would never have any contact with him again. It's been 30 years now, and I've never looked back. No apologies, no change. He still treats my enabling mother horribly and has caused lasting damage to two of his grandchildren, who live with them in terrible conditions. I don't know who'll be at his funeral, but I can say with certainty I won't be there, and I won't feel a shred of guilt about it. Walking away was the best decision I've ever made. Story 36. I was about 3 years old when my parents took my siblings and me to a local carnival. This wasn't something we typically did, except for my mother, who was from that state. We were visiting her family at the time. I remember watching my brother and sister getting to go on rides, and I'd get upset and cry because I was told I was too small, too little, etc. I just wanted to ride too and be a big kid, damn it. After my sister got off one of the rides, my dad was walking with me, holding my hand. Now my father was 6'3", and I was tiny. At some point, I don't remember exactly how, I lost his hand in the crowd. What I do remember vividly was the wave of dread, confusion, and absolute terror that came over me. I thought I'd never see my parents again and that I was lost forever. I immediately started crying and frantically looking around for someone, anyone, to help me find them. Most people didn't notice, and the few who might have just kept walking. Except one guy. He had a dark brown, maybe black, cowboy hat, a long brown ponytail, thick Coke bottle glasses, a white t-shirt with a vest, and dark cowboy boots with lots of silver on the tips. It was a southern state, obviously. This man instantly made me uncomfortable. The way he stared at me is burned into my memory even 30 years later. He started walking toward me with this look that reminded me of a grinning hyena getting a free meal. His cheeks sort of rolled up around his glasses, and his skin hung loosely off his face. He was only a few feet away when, out of the corner of my eye, I saw a large hand shoot out from the crowd and grab me. It was my dad. He immediately scooped me up onto his shoulders, and I clung to him for dear life, crying into his hair. The creepy guy saw my dad, turned sharply, and bolted into the crowd. I remember my dad saying, "This is where you're staying," and I just hugged him tighter, taking in the smell of his hair and reminding myself that it was really him, that I was safe. Years later, my mom told me there had been a predator in that area who was only caught years later. He had even killed children. I looked up the local news from that time, and sure enough, his mugshot was there. It was the man from the carnival. He had changed his look multiple times, like many criminals do, but I recognized those dark, beady, lifeless eyes immediately. Even now, decades later, the memory still gives me chills. Story 37. I had a big night in NYC in the 1980s. It was actually New Year's Eve, though my friend, who lived in the West Village, and I weren't going to any parties or events. We were just drinking at a bar. We drank a lot back then. Both of us were serious alcoholics, so it wasn't out of the ordinary for me to come out of a blackout while walking down Houston Street. It was freezing, and I had no clue where my friend was. I didn't have a key to his parents' apartment, and I wasn't close to it anyway. So I decided to do what a lot of people did in NYC back then. Find the vestibule of an apartment building and warm up there. I was sitting on the floor inside trying to get warm when a man and his date walked in. He immediately started yelling slurs at me, assuming I was homeless. I tried to explain that I was just a drunk guy trying to get home. His girlfriend was telling him to leave me alone, but he wouldn't stop. I must have said something that set him off because suddenly he pulled out a switchblade, 5 or 6 inches long, and actually tried to stab me. He cut my overcoat. I ran out the door, and he chased after me with the knife held high like he fully intended to use it. His face was so twisted with anger. I still remember it. As we were running down the street, this huge man jumped out of a nearby car and stepped between us. He looked at me and said, "Get in the car," then turned to the other guy and said something like, "You better not try anything you'll regret." Turned out he was driving a gypsy cab, and he took me back to my friend's parents' apartment. I told him I'd go inside to get money for the ride, but he just said, "Forget it. That guy was going to hurt you. You just go to sleep. Then he drove off. Story 38. I was living with my first serious boyfriend. We were constantly on and off because he had a habit of sting other women. Despite that, I took him back, and we ended up getting an apartment together. One night, the neighbors across the street invited us over for some tequila. We hung out for a bit, then went back home. He went to the bathroom, and something just felt off, so I checked his phone. I found pictures and messages that made it seem like he was completely single. When he came out of the bathroom, I started yelling at him. He suddenly rushed at me and shoved me backward onto the couch I was standing in front of. It's hard to explain, but when he pushed me, he stumbled and fell to his knees, and then he bit me. He actually latched onto my knee with his teeth. I panicked and started punching him in the face to get him off. Eventually, I managed to break free, grabbed my phone and my flip-flops, and ran out the door. I stuck to the alleyways as I tried to make my way to a friend's house. Not even 3 minutes later, as I was walking along a main road, he came speeding toward me in my car, jumped the curb, and nearly pinned me to a wooden fence. To make things worse, he had already held a gun to my head on two separate occasions before this. Looking back now, I realized just how dangerous that relationship was. I was young and naive, and I didn't understand how bad things had gotten until it almost cost me my life. Story 39. One day when I was in high school, I took the subway to class and was walking from the station. Just as I passed a telephone pole, I heard a loud screeching noise behind me, and a huge black pickup truck crashed into the pole right behind me. It fell over, and big, sharp splinters of wood flew everywhere. Live wires from the pole were scattered all over the ground around me. Those wires alone could have seriously injured me if I had stepped on one. Honestly, the truck missed hitting me by only a couple of inches. The driver turned out to be a student at my high school. Apparently, he had been speeding and lost control because he was trying to impress some girls who were in the truck with him. I truly believe that if the pole hadn't been there, that truck would have hit me directly, and that would have been it for me. It was a massive monster truck-style vehicle barreling toward me, and I was just a 5'0" tall, small teenage girl. Even though it didn't turn into a full-blown tragedy, it's terrifying to think how close I came to not making it. It may not be like some of the other stories on here, but technically, if he had hit me, it could have easily been a case of manslaughter.
This is an ad by Regain Couples Therapy and features real testimonials.
This was our first time trying therapy, and honestly, it was long overdue. Looking back, we just wish we had started sooner.
Regain's qualified therapists help couples when they can't get there on their own.
We thought it was intimacy issues, but Andrea helped us uncover a deeper root cause we hadn't even realized was there.
Visit regain.com/couplespod to get 10% off your first month. Regain, powered by BetterHelp.
Member Week is here at Lowe's. Don't miss your chance to get up to 40% off hundreds of items like paint, tools, home essentials, and more. Shop our exclusive deals happening in-store and online now through July 18th. Not a rewards member? Join for free today and get ready to save more. Lowe's, we help you save. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.